The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Star Foundation, and the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org.
It's been a year since the Deepwater Horizon explosion and the oil spill that resulted. And yet, many questions remain unanswered. What is the long-term impact of that disaster? How and when will our public policy change? And also, how will the relatively fragile ecosystem of the Gulf Coast end up recovering, if it does in some ways, from the oil spill? To mark the one-year anniversary of the disaster, we wanted to invite back two voices you heard often talking about what happened in the Gulf. Lisa Marganelli, director of the Energy Policy Initiative at the New America Foundation, and David Biello, editor at Scientific American. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning. Good morning.
You know, we've been talking to all these different people, and every single person gives us kind of a different snapshot of what's going on in the Gulf. And I know, David, you just got back recently, right?
Yes.
So give us the forest from all of these trees. What exactly is the state of the Gulf at this point?
Well, the Gulf appears to be recovering nicely. I say appears to be because we don't really know what the long-term impacts are going to be, like you said. We do know largely where the oil went on shore. What happened offshore, we have much less of a clue about. Basically, it dispersed in the water, and it's become so minute that we've lost track of it. However, a lot of it is ending up in algae. A lot of it is going to end up in the food chain. A lot of this oiled algae, dies and sinks to the bottom and then coats the bottom. Now, the studies of all that are ongoing. And the problem is we won't know the definitive answers about all this for 3 to 5 years while the studies are being done. Of course, we want answers today.
Yeah.
And I'm here to tell you that science can't give you those answers today.
Oh, dang, science never has the answer on time. Well, Lisa Marganelli, one of the reasons people want that today is because there's new applications to start drilling again. I mean, oil companies want to begin drilling in the Gulf again. Have we changed our public policy?
Well, we know that the regulators are spending a little more time reading the applications than they were before because they basically weren't reading them before. So a lot of things have changed on the outside. But I think, again, we don't actually know what's going on inside the Department.
But why don't we know that? That would seem to be something that should be entirely transparent.
Yeah. It's funny because we watched the spill on video, and it seems like we ought to be able to watch the entire permit review process on video. It would be funny to have kind of an oil C-SPAN so that, you know, consumers and taxpayers can watch the whole thing all the time.
Outside of even the review process, though, the technology to clean up oil spills at 5,000 feet beneath the surface has not changed whatsoever. We still don't have that technology.
We're still terrible at it.
Yeah, we're terrible at it. And, you know, the technology to clean up an oil spill is the same as it was in the 19th century. You stick a rag in it and sop up the oil and then squeeze that oil out.
All right. So it has been a year's time. What do we know, David, in terms of previous oil spills? Are we better off than, say, the recovery from Valdez?
Or we are, simply because the Gulf of Mexico is such a biologically rich ecosystem and one that's been exposed to oil throughout its life. There are natural seeps in the Gulf of Mexico. The microbes in the Gulf of Mexico are primed, if you will, to eat oil. And that's what they did. It was like a, you know, all-you-can-eat buffet for them when this oil spill happened.
Okay. Well, Lisa, now maybe you can reassure me about our public policy in terms of energy, because we've had some very upsetting news in terms of how we get our fuel. We've had the Deepwater Horizon spill. We've had, of course, the Fukushima nuclear plant in Japan. All this makes me very concerned about the safety of how I power things.
Yeah, and you should be concerned.
No, I asked for the reassuring answer to that question, actually.
You know, the thing is like the Gulf was really the U.S.'s default energy policy. We have not had a policy for 20 years or so of driving down oil demand. And so oil demand has grown in the U.S. And we have simply imported more oil, or where we could, we have drilled the heck out of the Gulf. Now, drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge had become a political football. People are very attached to that idea of not drilling up there, even though they haven't seen it. But here we had the Gulf, which was a marine sanctuary. It was bird sanctuaries. But it was so highly industrialized. You look at a map of the Gulf and you look at the pipelines and the thing is like a factory. And we treated it like a factory. And we didn't have proper regulation. We didn't have proper concern, I think, on the part of environmental groups to get in there and fight. We never got the big ball of wax of like, we are in trouble. because we disperse the oil droplets at the same time we disperse the anger, we disperse the political will, and we just sort of let this huge ecological disaster happen, and we have not moved forward. We have not moved on our energy policy.
And what about the food that we're getting out of the Gulf? Because they're pulling shrimp and other kinds of sea creatures out of the Gulf for us to eat. First of all, let's kind of break apart the catches. We have both some people saying, look, we got a record catch going on. We just talked to someone else who said there's no juveniles in all these fish that I'm catching, and that it concerns me. And then we have all these reassurance saying, buy shrimp for the Gulf. It's totally safe.
Well, let me say something about the populations first, which is that it took 3 years after the Exxon Valdez for the herring fishery to collapse. That's because it was the youth of the herring population that were wiped out by the oil spill. We won't know, like I said, for a couple years what the impact is in the Gulf of Mexico. The good news is it's a much richer ecosystem than where the Exxon Valdez
spilled. More diverse.
Yeah, more diverse. There are more species, and it's so productive because of the Mississippi River and all the fertility of that whole region. But we still won't know for a number of years. We want to know now, but we won't know.
Okay, well, tell me now whether I can eat the shrimp that comes out of the Gulf.
Well, it depends on which government agency you want to believe.
That's my problem.
So the Food and Drug Administration says perfectly safe. That's because they test only the meat of the shrimp. So you think about
the translucent part.
Well, the butterflied shrimp. So, you know, right. the tasty part. But most people eat their shrimp with the vein still in.
Yeah.
So that is where the oil would congregate if the oil is being eaten. That's the way the Environmental Protection Agency tests for these things. And their findings are a little bit more worrisome, and not enough that I would say stop eating seafood. But they're saying control your portion to about 4 shrimp
because
a day.
There's oil in the veins.
Correct.
And if you consume too much,
it can be bad for you.
Yeah, I would assume.
Yes.
Now,
4 shrimp is what kind of falls off a po' boy down south. So,
well, all right. So the takeaway I'm getting from David Biello is, it seems okay now, but it could be really, really bad when we really find out for sure in 3 to 5 years, right?
Yes.
Okay. And the takeaway I'm getting from Lisa Marganelli is it seemed really bad when the explosion went forward and we found out how lax the regulation is, and that could still be true.
I think it could still be true. Yeah.
All right. That's Lisa Marganelli, director at the Energy Policy Initiative at the New America Foundation, and David Biello, associate editor at Scientific American. That's as reassuring as it gets, guys. Thanks.